Hi, this is Andrew P. Mayer, author of The Falling Machine, and you're listening to the SF Signal podcast.
This is the Parsec-nominated SF Signal podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester, and I ate too much. That's the problem with any holiday, all of the food. Hopefully everyone out there had a safe and sane Independence Day, or 4th of July, as we call it here in America. Did you happen to see the video of the sandstorm hitting Phoenix? I mean, my goodness, talk about science fiction. That looked like something that ILM created, like for the next Transformers movie. Transformers 4, Race You to the Door. Yeah, that's some scary stuff. I don't know. Today's episode features an interview with Andrew P. Mayer, author of the new steampunk trilogy that is out from Pyre called The Falling Machine, The Society of Steam, Book 1. And I had a great time chatting with Andrew, and I'll get to that in just a minute here. But before that, I did want to remind you one last time about the Summer of Sci-Fi Trivia Contest. We here at SF Signal have joined forces with Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing and Mer Lafferty's I Should Be Writing to bring this trivia contest to you guys. It's a giveaway. You answer the trivia questions and you get stuff. So sponsored by Pyre, we actually have 12 books that we're giving away to 6 winners who are going to be selected at random from eligible entries. To name just a few of the books you could win, so this is to make you guys go, we have The Buntline Special by Mike Resnick, Sasha by Joel Shepard, The Strange Affair of Spring Hill Jack by Mark Hoder, I'm saying it is Hoder now, of which, by the way, there's a review up over on FunctionalNerds.com. Oh, did you see what I did there? That's right, FunctionalNerds.com. John D. will let me, he'll let me plug that once in a while. We also have Dive in the Wreck and City of Ruins by Christine Catherine Rush. She told me how to pronounce her name, and I'm still getting it wrong. This is why I should always have a pronunciation guide in front of me, people. Always have the pronunciation guide in front of me. Did I ever tell you the story that, like, John D. did? He recorded an interview for us, and because I was at work, and he sent me a pronunciation guide MP3. How freaking cool is that? It's like, here's how you pronounce all the names. That's what I need each and every week. And the other another book that they're giving away is the one that I talked to Andrew about for this show, which is The Falling Machine, The Society of Steam, Book 1. So you could win possibly some of those books. Now, we here at SF Signal, we've already given you our trivia question. It was a couple episodes back. If you didn't catch it, shame on you. You need to rewind a couple of episodes and listen. But you do need all 3 questions to get the answers to enter the contest. So to get the other 2 questions, you need to check out Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing and the I Should Be Writing podcasts for their questions. You collect the answers to all 3 and submit them to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing at gmail.com by midnight on Friday, July 22nd. So you got a couple weeks. But please include your name, your address, and your phone number with your entry. And if you're worried about that, the reason we're asking for the phone number is just, you know, in case something happens with your email and they need to get hold of you. So due to copyright restrictions, this contest is open only to residents of North America who just celebrated Independence Day. Woohoo! Winners will be selected by blind drawing and notified by email before subsequent announcements through the participating podcast, which means we're going to tell you who won. Now, visit AdventuresInSciFiPublishing.com and IShouldBeWriting.com for their episodes and, of course, SFSignal.com for ours. Only 1 entry per person, please. Alrighty, so now that I've gotten that out of the way, let's get on to the interview with Andrew P. Mayer, author of The Falling Machine. And tonight on the line with me, I have Andrew P. Mayer, author of The Falling Machine out from Pyre Books. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Patrick. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good.
So
glad to be here.
Well, and we're glad to have you. For the benefit of our listeners, why don't you tell them, who is Andrew?
Okay. Wow. Who is it? That's a big question. usually I get asked about the book first. Well, this is my first novel. And it's, you know, it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. So as a novelist, it's really exciting for me to have a book out there. And, you know, I just saw it on the shelves for the first time. So it's really been a dream come true.
I bet that was a thrill.
I was in New York City too. And so it was really, and I don't know if you saw the tweet that I put up, but it turns out my name is very close to George Martin's name.
Mm-hmm.
So my book was one shelf below all of his titles, you know, because with the TV series out, he's taken over the whole shelves. And you know, that's a nice coincidence right there to be below the number one series in America. I'll take that.
I was even going to ask you, you know, I know a lot of wannabe writers and who have not yet been published, and there's a game that you play. And that's where you go to the bookstore and you go through the shelves and you look to see where your book would fall.
That's funny. You know, I think unfortunately my version of that was feeling a little overwhelmed by all the books that are on the shelves and wondering, you know, if I get up here, will I be noticed? But it is pretty thrilling once you're up there.
We got to chat with Peter Aurelian a little while ago. He's got a new book out, and he was absolutely thrilled. Someone from work texted him that his book was at Costco.
Wow. That's nice.
Yeah, and yeah. So he ran over to Costco to take a picture.
Somebody tells me I will definitely run over to, I'll definitely run over and do it. It's thrilling. I mean, it's like, the only thing I'll say, and I said this to people, you know, the dream of it, and the reality is kind of, it's hard to wrap your head around it because you've had this idea of it for so long, and then when it happens, it's not disappointing. I think that's the wrong word. It's just not. It's exactly what you want, and the feelings aren't exactly what you imagined they would be. So it's interesting, but it's nice to have the book there. It's nice to have something with my name on it. So you know, it's exciting.
Absolutely.
And go ahead.
Oh, as you can say. So you know, obviously Andrew's a writer. And is this the first thing you've written, or have you had other stuff?
Well, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this some more, but when I'm not writing, I'm a video game designer. And I've been doing that for quite a while. And, I was getting into writing. I actually got into Clarion West and didn't end up going because like 3 weeks before I was supposed to go, I got my first job in video games. So I had one of those fork in the road moments in my life. And, I've been writing, you know, I've been trying to get it. I mean, it was more like breaking through short stories in magazines when that last time was still sort of the primary way. And, you know, I've been getting, starting to get letters from editors, and I was getting pretty close to the whole thing. But the problem was I was spending every, you know, I wasn't doing anything but writing and working. And I just felt like I hadn't really gotten the experience I needed to be the kind of writer I wanted to be. So I made a decision to, you know, do a job that'd be creative during the day, and then that way I could go out and actually have a life at night. And it took a little longer than I expected. It was I expected it would be like a 5-year detour, and it was really closer to, I don't know, 12, 14, something like that. But I got back to it eventually, so, you know, and it worked out. So,
any video game titles that we might know?
The big one that I did, there's a game called Pets with a Z, Dogs with a Z, Cats with a Z, Babies with a Z. So I was the original designer and producer of that title. Mm-hmm. And way back in the dawn of history and in the 90s, and it's still out there. I mean, the game still sells today. I mean, it's you know, it's an artificially intelligent pet. So all my stuff, I was a creative director at Cartoon Network in 2000, and so yeah, for the website online stuff and the games. So there was a lot of my, you know, Powerpuff Girl games, Dexter games, stuff like that. So
Dexter.
all the great turn of the century cartoon characters. Yeah, I got to play with those a little bit. So it was fun.
I just found out. I follow a blog called Comics Should Be Good, and one of their columns is Comic Book Legends Revealed, and that guy also does other kind of Legends Revealed, so Entertainment Legends Revealed, Movie Legends. Anyway, he had a story about there was a rated R episode of Dexter's Laboratory that was never released.
Huh. I never saw it.
it's been shown at conventions.
Wow.
But that's about the only place you can see it. And essentially, it's just because Dexter creates a rude removal tool or something like that. but it backfires, and it starts cloning people and creating more rude people, and they start cussing. And I mean, it's supposed to be really funny. Anyway, I digress. I love Cartoon Network. So you're doing the video game thing. You're trying to stay creative. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're trying to continue writing. Did you do some short stories?
You know, I have, and I mean, there's a lot of stuff sitting in the boxes and places of short stories. But really, this time around, I mean, I really just got into the novel writing. I mean, it was a strange turn of events. I mean, it's hard for me to deconstruct it a little bit. I mean, basically, I guess it was around 2006. I just got it into my head to write a steampunk book, and you know, it was heavily based on having seen some stuff at Burning Man. There's a group called Kinetic Steamworks that does some amazing stuff. And back then, they all had these little propane-powered steam cars that they were zipping around the desert, you know, in their Victorian outfits. And I just, you know, the zeitgeist hit me, and I felt the urge, and I started down. You know, I didn't know what was going to happen. I just started writing the book, and I really just decided to get focused and do it. I tried to write novels previously and had a really hard time. And the big switch for me, and this is always a point of controversy, I think, is I did heavy outlining this time. So, you know, and that really, there was two things really. I did heavy outlining, and I didn't build any more of the world than I needed for the book. So, like, previously I had done a lot of world building before I had gotten, and this I really tried to match the amount of world building, the world that I was creating. Because I felt like previously when I tried to do it, I mean, before I had written a 3,000-year history, I mean, it was bananas. And,
wow.
And it's a brick wall. For me anyway, it's a brick wall that I was building around myself. I mean, I was so trapped by the events that I'd written that I wasn't able to actually tell a story in that world. So, you know, between the outlining and really being, you know, and the outlining really helped because when I hit a point in the writing that I felt like I just, you know, I didn't know what the heck I was doing, I just let the outline guide me through that. And then, you know, eventually you come out the other side and you're sort of feeling like you're back on the horse. And that way I could just keep writing. And as bad as a writing day as it could be, even if I was just getting out, you know, 500 words instead of 2,000, at least I was doing it and keeping the beat going. And that really helped an awful lot. So
when you were writing short fiction, did you outline?
No. I mean, for short pieces, I think it's just really exploring an idea. I did a bunch, you know, right around that time, I did a bunch of short stuff that I may start putting up like a writer's bestiary, where I sort of did an A to Z. I was trying to do an A to Z short stories around 600 to 700 words, and it was fun. I mean, I think for that, it's just really, you know, for me, those are just exploring the idea and figuring out how I can get to an ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to get as... I don't have to get as detailed and really, you know, pull as much through. So it's a different kind of ride, and it's a lot more freeing, I think, in that way.
Okay. So you see these folks zipping around in their little steampunk cars,
mm-hmm.
and you just think, wow, I need to learn more about this.
Well, okay. So the other thing about me is I always tend to be a little, I hate to say it, this sounds terribly self-aggrandizing when I say it, but it's really, I tend to be able to pick up on a lot of trends pretty early. And my natural tendency is, and I think anybody who does do that, or anybody who's, I mean, not like I see everything coming, but I do see some stuff coming, is that you tend to think it's over when it's really just beginning. And, you know, because you see it starting to go mainstream, you see more people getting into it. I mean, you saw that with steampunk last year, right? Where everybody's like, oh, steampunk's over, you know, people still talking about that. But there's a moment where things, if they're successful, they transition into a larger culture. And you know, the people who were originally doing it aren't following it. So... You know, my goal was to sort of stick with it and just keep going head down, like learn about it, get excited about the culture of it. You know, but I was familiar with the 80s stuff. I mean, I was familiar with, you know, the Difference Engine and the Paul DeFilippo stuff and you know, even Jeter's stuff. So I kind of knew where it had come from. And, you know, on top of that, I sort of had a lot, you know, I think anime had a lot of, you know, anime wasn't afraid to deal with Victorian era as fantasy,
mm-hmm.
And hasn't been over the last couple decades. Or, you know, so I think, you know, I just sort of kind of mashed that together and kept an eye on the fashion and the technology stuff. So that was sort of my guidepost. And the other thing I decided was, you know, I'm a native New Yorker. I was born in Manhattan, but my mother was born in London. So I was like, you know, so I could have, but I was just like, let's give New York a shot. You know, everything was sort of coming out of London at that point. I really wanted to make a book that, you know, talk about what I love about New York. I mean, you know, I don't live there anymore, but there is, you know, there is a lot to love about that city. And you know, the more research I did and the more I got my head into that era, like the more I realized that was like the birth of what we consider to be New York. Like the way we think of Manhattan, the way we think of New York now, that really started in that period.
Okay, so you've got your renewed interest in steampunk. You've mm-hmm. got your love of New York. You decide to mix your peanut butter and the chocolate together and come up with this book.
Yep. And we get superheroes. We have to throw superheroes into this. I don't know what flavor that is
anymore. So this is the birth of the Falling Machine. So why don't you tell folks about the Falling Machine?
Sure. So the Falling Machine is so it's a superhero steampunk novel, New York City, 1880, and the Sir Dennis Darby, the leader of the world's greatest team of gentlemen adventurers, the Paragons, is murdered on top of the Brooklyn Bridge. And that's a spoiler. Sorry, no spoiler warnings for that. I have that. It happens in the first scene in the book, pretty much. So, and his protege, a young woman named Sarah Stanton, who is the daughter of the industrialist, another hero, and a mechanical man named the Automaton that he has created, come together. They're both there when he's murdered, and they're trying to understand why, uncover the mystery of why he was murdered.
Okay.
And as they start looking to uncover the mystery, they begin to uncover corruption, that there is corruption in the Paragons themselves. And that's really, and then they start to uncover the villain who is behind the events that have gone on. It opens with it's funny because, I tried very hard to do this, and yet it's funny, Darby, he's dead in the beginning of the book, but I want him to be a character.
Right.
That reverberates through the story. And obviously not everything you do is going to work with everyone, but people came, oh, Darby, you killed him off and I miss him. You talk about him, but I don't get to see him. I'm like, well, that's kind of the joy of having a character, a powerful character who disappears in the first sequence. So
I was telling you before we started recording that Jill over at Prometheus was kind enough to send me a copy of the book. So I'm staring at the book right now. The cover is absolutely awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, that's Justin Gerard. He did a great, great job. And that was the first book cover he did. He's going to do all three volumes for me, but there's no doubt he's going to be doing a whole lot more. I mean, he's got a great sense of it.
So on here, you've got your automaton. You've got mm-hmm. your lady hero. Who is the pirate refugee from Nomaragon?
That's the Bomblance. It's funny. When Justin put the cover together, the Bomblance, he's a villain, right? He's not the lead villain. You'll see him show, you can see the lead villain on the cover book too, if you take a look, but that got him more airtime. I mean, got him more page time. I mean, book two and book three, I was like, okay, if the guy's gonna be on the cover, I need to get deeper into who this guy is and what he's got going on. So, but he's got plenty of action in the first book. So, he's a guy. He's an Irishman that uses a mechanical harpoon, a steam powered harpoon as his weapon. So I won't say too much more than that. But he's he's a lot of fun, and he doesn't have a lot of human compassion. Let's say.
did you ever read the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what are your influences for this? You mentioned superheroes, you mentioned steampunk in Old Town New York.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, a little bit of Girl Genius. I feel a little bit of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen in here. I mean, what was your influences that kind of...
Maybe, I'll tell you though, honestly, I mean, Girl Genius I like. I mean, and I've read it. I mean, it wasn't my inspiration. I mean, I'll be honest, like for me, and it's funny, I keep getting all these DC references in the reviews, which makes me a little crazy because I really love the 60s era Marvel, and that whole idea of this story being told. And that if you read, go back and you read the early Marvel stuff, the early Fantastic Four and the early Avengers, especially the Kirby stuff, there's this sense of the time, like this Mad Men era superhero stories being told, right? And so my inspiration really was to say, okay, what if I transplanted that feeling to the 1880s? Like, what if I, told a story of heroes of that time? And maybe keep it a little, and the idea also, I think, that Marvel, started out with this sort of, Marvel comics were simpler back then, but it was also all about trying to tell emotional stories, right? I mean, that was the big Stan Lee moment, was that he decided with Fantastic Four, he wasn't just going to tell superhero stories, he was going to have it be about a family, right? And... you go a little farther, right? Every, the Invisible Girl turns invisible because, it's about, the comics, Stan Lee's thing is he takes the emotion inside and makes it their power, right? So the thing is rocky and unapproachable and, and, you know, Johnny Storm's a hothead and all that kind of stuff. I didn't go quite that far, although there's a little of that, but, you know, that was my inspiration, and marrying that with the whole idea of this, you know, this Victorian era, you know, Jim Crackery or whatever you want to call it, of amazing, maybe nobody probably is going to want to call it that, but of amazing devices and, you know, and just, and that sort of, you know, spectacle that I think people enjoy, right? Of having things be a little beyond, you know, things that are cool. I mean, and fun to see and strike the imagination. And I can, for some reason, I've been gifted with the ability to come up with a lot of that stuff. So.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, that sounds cool. You know, I'm a huge comic book fan myself. So I know where you're coming from there. What's interesting to me now, we talked again a little bit before we actually started recording, about steampunk itself. And you know where it came from, you know where it is right now. Do you think you know where it's going?
I don't. I mean, you know, it's interesting, right? I mean, it's we're at a point. I mean, it's so different from so many other genres. Like, if you look at what happens with other genres that come out, usually what there is there's a hit piece of media that everybody looks to, and then genres all come out of it, right? So even like, not to, you know, like even the whole romantic vampire thing, right? You have to have that big, like, that's a subgenre, but it took off because there was one big book, right? And normally that's how you see genres work. And steampunk has come out of this maker culture. You know, I mean, what really revived it is not the literary. It was the physical, right? That all these people dressing up and making stuff and having a community around that and you know, reinventing themselves and as these characters and the books are really kind of following on from that, you know. So I don't know what happens next. I mean, what I think needs to happen is there needs to be a steampunk movie that isn't Sherlock Holmes. not that it wasn't a great film, but I just don't think it captures enough of what the story is. And I don't know, you know, I know that there's some stuff in process, and hopefully there'll be something that people can turn to. That said, right, I mean, people are fiercely protective of the fact that steampunk is a pretty wide open genre right now. You know, I've been to a couple conventions, and I think that's, you know, for the audience, it's kind of funny because people are like, what's punk about steampunk? Well, it's like, well, one, it's, you know, it's got a DIY aspect to it that, you know, was used to be a big part of 70s punk culture. And the other part of it is that, you know, people are fiercely protective of that independence of the, you know, it is whatever you want it to be, mm-hmm. an attitude. So so it'll be interesting to see. I mean, and so the success of steampunk means there'll be some disappointment amongst the fans of, you know, the early fans, which there always is, but it'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out. I have a good feeling about it. I think it, you know, the idea, you know, my elevator pitch on steampunk to people who never heard of it before is Victorian era fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I've suggested the phrase chronopunk as the idea that, you know, there's a lot of eras that could have, fantastic elements added to them, you know, maybe the diesel punk idea and, you know, whatever, and all these kind of things, you know, and which I think Doctor Who does with some regularity. You know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, we'll see how far it goes and how people are. But I think it's certainly the idea of that Victorian era having fantastic elements can stand the test of time for a while. You know, I don't think people are ever going to be sad about seeing more books. And as the romance stuff takes off, I think that's even going to, you know, go farther.
It's interesting that you mentioned Sherlock Holmes, because I don't necessarily feel that was steampunk, even steampunk light. The last thing that I remember that I felt truly was steampunk was a little Canadian show. I believe it was made in Canada, called The Secret Adventures of Jules Verne.
Oh man, was that part of like the Action Pack or something like that? Was that part of Sam Raimi stuff?
No, I don't think it was. But it did make it to the channel formerly known as Sci-Fi. Okay. But then they very quickly relegated it to like the 2 a.m. slot on Saturday night or something.
Yeah, I give it to Sherlock Holmes only because it's the right period. They did actually manage to, except for one big thing at the end, which the term radio wasn't invented anywhere near where they were using it. But anyway, I digress. But you know, there was some beautiful, beautiful stuff there in terms of, you know, period stuff and sort of overpower. I mean, I thought they did, you know, I worked at steampunk for me. I mean, I think the other thing was, that scene on the boat in the boatyard, as soon as I saw them going, I was like, oh man, I wish I'd thought of that. Like that sequence where, you know, because that's the kind of thing you want, right? Where it starts sort of, there's a relatively benign fight, and then you have these bigger and bigger elements coming in, and it's growing as the boat, you know, as the guy's knocking the supports out from underneath the boat. I mean, that's a fantastic, and I think that, you know, that to me was like the essence of what, you know, the you can do there is find things that are similar to what we have now, a little more mechanistic, a little more dangerous and pointy and not, you know, and no safety railings or goggles and really let loose, you know?
So to kind of circle back a little bit to your book, tell me a little bit about your heroine.
About, so she's the daughter of a superhero, right? So, and, you know, I think, and she wants to be one, but she, you know, but obviously what a woman can be in that time is limited, right? And balancing that, and it's interesting because, you know, I get it's the book one is difficult, right? Because I'm writing a trilogy and I'm playing a long game on a lot of this stuff, and it's going to be interesting to see. So people have opinions about things in book one. You know, it's too much of this, or it's not enough that, or, you know, the characters are a little too broad, or this guy's a caricature. And it's like the intention is to set these characters up so I have something to play against later on. Mm-hmm. I'm not claiming everything is that way. I'm sure there's things I'm doing wrong, but some of them are. And, you know, with Sarah, it's like she wants to break, you know, she wants to break out of the conventions of her period. But at the same time, you know, I'm really not saying that she doesn't want to be of her time. Like, you know, my mother's British and was, you know, she went to a girls' school and, you know, her accent, you know, is a somewhat finished accent in the sense that, you know, she learned how to speak proper English, even though she already had a British accent. And my mother's a very fiercely independent person. At the same time, it's not like she doesn't want to be who she is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So trying to find that balance, and that I think was for me important. Like, I don't want to have just another heroine who's like, you know, if only I could be like the modern woman of the year 2011, I'm sure everything would be awesome. You know, it's like I want her to be of her period, but I also want her to be fight. You know, but it's no fun if she's not fighting against some of those conventions, right? And trying to be more. And she really wants to be a superhero. She really wants to, you know, get out there. But as it happens, she begins to understand that it's not all that, you know, that this, you know, I mean, well, to go back to a famous line, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Like, she begins to understand that getting into this and, you know, fighting crazy people is a crazy business and, you know, and her, you know, something that her father kind of knows and she's getting more and more embroiled in this and she, you know, and going all the way back to the beginning of the conversation and seeing the book on the bookshelf, getting what you want isn't the same as you imagine it's going to be when you want it. Right. And so that's important to me in the way that to me is how I see the character. Right. Is that there's things she wants. There's a life that she wanted, but having it isn't the same as dreaming about it.
Wow. That's good stuff.
Well, hopefully it comes through. I mean, it's been interesting. I mean, getting reviewed is an interesting thing and I'm still getting used to it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm smart enough to keep my mouth shut and realize, you know, that's part of the deal. Like, you put stuff out in the world, but it's still, you know, you're like, oh, how can I tell them? Like, didn't the book communicate it? Sometimes people get it and it's equally as joyful, right? It's like, wow. Okay, that was what I intended and that's what you read. That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, if you're not responding, you're doing good. The first time published author, you see it now and then, you know, someone will get a bad review and they'll go off.
You know,
that's not good.
No, I mean, I make games. Games are about creating an experience for the audience. Like, for me, being a good game designer, and this is something I talk to people who are just getting started, it's about, it doesn't matter what you want. It matters what your audience, how the audience reacts, right? You have to be thinking about people that you're making the game for. And
sure.
I think that's fair with, you know, everybody's going to have their own reaction to the book. I can just write the best experience. You know, I can write the book that I want to read. I can offer the experience that, that I can do my best job to make the best experience I can. And that's it. And, you know, not everybody's going to love it. Right? There's just no way in the world. And, you know, and the truth is, I'd rather have an intense reaction than no reaction at all. You know, have you ever heard of, probably haven't heard of this guy, Raph Koster?
Not off the top of my head, no.
So he is a video game designer. I think he's at Zynga now, but he did a game, he did the Star Wars game. The Star Wars massively multiplayer game and a bunch of other stuff. He wrote a book called A Theory of Fun. That's a pretty standard book in game design circles.
I preferred Rogue Squadron, TIE Fighter, and the first few Jedi games. Those were the most fun Star Wars games ever.
Yeah, well, the early days were great, right? I mean, because there was an innocence to the whole thing. I mean, that were awesome. Yeah, no, but he he did the MMO, but he said that the difference, you know, it's not about like or dislike it's about care or don't care. Like, and it's hard to swallow that sometimes, but you know, it's, if people feel passionately and intensely about your work, especially on the internet, it doesn't really make a difference whether they love it or hate it. It's not easy to deal with the hate, but the fact that people are engaging with it and care about it is important.
Well, and being an author, I mean, you build up a thick skin. You have to, because you have to get used to all those rejection letters coming in.
Right, that's true. You have, it's a thick skull, right? Just banging your. I always say, like, getting into books is like learning how to bang your head into a brick wall until suddenly it isn't there anymore.
So it sounds like you spun a good yarn. It sounds like it's full of adventure. You know, I'm excited. I can't wait to read it. That's why I said, you know, I'm really glad that Jill sent me a copy. So I'm going to go through this. Why don't you tell people, you know, is this available everywhere? Can they go to Amazon? Can they go to Barnes & Noble?
Yeah. So yes, Amazon for sure. Barnes & Noble for sure. Even Borders.
Okay. If you have one,
if there's one survive, which I'm very pleased about, even though it's I think we can safely say it's the twilight of Borders, but maybe not, maybe we'll come back. It's out on the shelves. It's in a lot of stores right now, so that's great. There will be an ebook edition. It's not out, available yet because Pyre has decided to make a commitment towards higher quality ebooks, but that's pushed everything back a little bit. So, you know, I know that the hotter books are just coming out as ebooks, and he's ahead of the line in front of me. So I'm sure mine will be out eventually.
Okay.
But yeah, the ebooks will be coming, and right now the print books are everywhere.
And where can people find you online? What's your website, your Twitter, your Facebook, all that kind of good stuff?
Okay, so me online is andrewpmayer.com, which I think will be up by the time it better be up by the time this is running. I'm Andrew Mayer that's on Twitter without the P. And then the other place I'd love people to go is there's a Society of Steam page, fan page. So just facebook.com/Society of Steam. Society of Steam being the name of the trilogy. I don't think we mentioned that. So they're welcome to join that. So that's really, and then there's Goodreads as well. And that's actually far more presence than I on the web than I can actually handle, but I'm trying to juggle all that stuff right now.
Well, that's awesome. You know, it sounds like a great book. More power to you, man. Hopefully this is going to just go through the roof.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And the interview's been great. I enjoy it. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Andrew. That was great. We had a lot of fun. Everybody should check out The Falling Machine. I have a copy. I am reading it right now. It is very cool. There you go. Check it out. Society of Steam Book 1, The Falling Machine from Andrew P. Mayer. Well, that's it for us this week. Let me do the usual kind of stuff. sfsignal.com. You should be checking that out. In case you didn't know, in case you haven't already hit it, we have a lot of cool things going on over there. As I'm recording this, there's a guest post up by Alex Bledsoe called The Reclaiming of Lois Lane. We have a giveaway, Raising Stony Mayhill by Daryl Gregory. There's a review of Flashback by Dan Simmons, and I think Dan Simmons is a Denver kind of guy, Colorado kind of guy. There's a mind meld on steampunk and the longevity of steampunk, which would be very apropos given the topic of tonight's interview. And then, of course, I've got my interactive sci-fi and fantasy convention map that I put up. I used Google Maps to create essentially a map of sci-fi and fantasy conventions across the U.S. And a couple outside the U.S. So it's kind of North American centric, but I'm adding some other stuff as I go. So you should check that out. So sfsignal.com, lots of cool stuff there all the time for the contributors and from John D. So check that out. Follow John on Twitter, twitter.com/sfsignal. He tweets things all throughout the week. Really good links, so you want to follow him. If you're looking for me, I am ATFMB, so twitter.com/ATFMB, ATFMB.com, facebook.com/ATFMB. And, of course, I've got the Functional Nerds over at functionalnerds.com, which is the other podcast and our website. If you have any thoughts, comments, suggestions, anything at all that you want to tell us, we have a voicemail line for that, 720-277-9082. That's run by Google. So you got 3 minutes when you call that number to tell us what you think, what you want us to know. Give us a call. Let us know what's going on. If you enjoy this podcast, there's a couple things you can do to help us out. Number one, tell a friend or two.
tell them, hey, check out sfsignal.com. Check out the podcast. It's a good thing. You can also give us a couple stars on iTunes. Subscribe to us via iTunes, that kind of stuff. I think that's it for me. We will be back next week with another panel and another interview. So until then, no more hot dogs. Please. I think I'm hot dogged out.